Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. This is our first show of 2015, and actually we're heading into my fourth year here on Progressive Radio Network, PRN, and delighted to be here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. and bring you different guests and experts, advocates, authors, a whole range of people who are looking at the various facets of what affects our health. I have been reporting on health and also food and the environment for over 25 years, and I began reporting on all of the wonderful individual recommendations and things we could do to improve our health. Over the last decade or more, it's become sadly obvious that despite the health-seeking behaviors and lifestyle changes that so many people in the health-conscious community have made, that social decision-making and policies runs counter to our health promotional behaviors. And in fact, we're having to kind of pedal harder and harder and go uphill in order to keep up because of these social policy changes and the activities of various industries and sectors that create damage to our health, to our environment, to our food supply. So every week on Connect the Dots, this is what we talk about with different people who have specialized and interrelated knowledge of these different aspects of all the social things we need to do to really create a pro-health society and upgrade our health, and even continue to maintain our health in many cases. And you'll hear all about all of those things every week on this show. Today's show and the new year 2015 begins with the return of a guest that I've been so happy to have on the program before. I think it's been probably well over 6 months since she's been here, and that's because in representing and protecting our food supply, today's guest, Lisa Stokey, and her organization, Food Democracy Now, really have been in the forefront, and because there is so much need for citizen participation and different and involvement and familiarity and pushing for a whole range of initiatives to keep this society turning toward healthy food and not the opposite. Lisa, who is a co-founder of Food Democracy Now, and Dave Murphy, the other co-founder, who will not be with us today, have been frequent guests on this program, just to keep you all involved and updated about what the people who care about healthy food can do to make it available, more widely available, and to protect the healthy food supply. So welcome again for our latest update of current initiatives and concerns. Welcome again and Happy New Year to you, Lisa Stokey.
Hi, Allison. It's so great to hear your voice, and what a wonderful introduction. I can't help but think that with that opening that you're thinking of the new Republican Congress that we have. Can I say that?
Well, you know, honestly, the opening message, I've been refining my own message because I actually, yeah. It's funny that you say that. I've been refining my own message because, you know, I've been doing this now for, 10 years, trying to link the health community and the environmental community with activism and, the environmental community with health. So I stand at that bridge point. So, and I've been thinking more and more about how to refine that message and get more people involved. So, and of course, there are, as you mentioned, upgraded concerns, and I don't feel that we can still, we can do all the healthy things, we can feel love in our heart, we can do stress management, but unless we also take a look at what's going on in our society and get involved there, I think we're in for some, sad disappointments. The Republican Congress could very well be a contributing factor to that, and that's why these updates that you bring, every 6 months or so to this program, and sooner if there are timely actions, are so necessary. So before we get into the Congress that begins, and that's kind of there simmering in the background, Let's review for our listeners what the progress and obstacles have been over the last year since the time that you and Dave were on the show back last summer, as I think when you were last on the show, because at that point we were heading into an election and there were a number of initiatives and referendums and opportunities for people to make their voices heard, into the noise of current politics. So I'd love to hear, your perspective on where those actions have landed and what we need to do, learn, and how we should be moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I do appreciate, as we've had so many conversations, your attention to this issue. It is a very important issue. And, at Food Democracy, we've been working on this issue of labeling genetically engineered food since 2007. When we presidential summit in Iowa, President Obama, candidate then, and for genetically engineered. And, we're still working on, getting that promise. 64 other countries in the world label genetically engineered foods and ingredients in their products. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we have more and more, vegetables and different things that are sitting in the approval track right now, waiting for approval. Right now there's a comment period this week for a potato by Simplot. McDonald's has said that they won't sell, which is good, I guess. But of course, we have to get our comments in, to the USDA to say that we do not want this approved. If you're on that side, which I hope you are, all the listeners out there. And so, people think, a lot of these genetically engineered ingredients, it's in 70-80% of our grocery store foods. And, do I really need to worry about it? And, the thing is what we've always maintained in all of these ballot initiatives that we've put forward now in California and Washington and Oregon and Colorado, and there's been 30, over 30 bills, actually, in many states, or rather in 30 states, 30 states have put forward bills to label genetically engineered foods. And in, Poland, consistently, 90% and more than 90% even in some polls, people say they want to know. And that's really all this is about. People just want to know. And, getting back to what I was saying about processed foods versus like a genetically engineered, potato or the sweet corn, which is now on the market, we just don't really know. We don't really know what the health implications are for humans, in eating a direct genetically engineered.
Mm-hmm.
So if they do want to avoid it, that they can. And we think it's a very basic, right that we have to know what we're eating.
Yes. I think that, that makes a lot of sense. That's very clear. Let's talk a little bit about the corn, because I think, on the one hand, it can kind of like, we want to know. But then, sometimes some people are like, clued in right to that and understand the problem. And then there's probably a broader audience of people that are like, oh, well, activists are angry, or, I don't have time, or this or that or the other. And then they don't think about it until that product comes down to them and their family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's talk a little bit about the corn. Does that mean, one of the questions, because we know there is a certain kind of GMO corn, what people don't really understand is whether, that's going to affect corn on the cob, or that they're eating, or is it in the popcorn they're eating, or is it not in the popcorn they're eating, but it will be in the popcorn they're eating, in other words, or is it just something that kind of is fed to animals? And let's just kind of walk through the whole corn question a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, that's a really good question, and this is the question that we do get a lot, as people become more and more aware of genetically engineered foods, that they are out there, that they've been, consuming them for, at least 15 years now. Because most of our commodity products are genetically engineered. you know that go into ingredients in our processed foods. You know, corn is one of the, it's like right up there. You know, it's right around 90% of our corn that's grown. And this, of course, you know, points to the very good reason of why we do need labeling, because there is so much, you know, mystery around it, really, right? And of course, it's very promiscuous and it does cross pollinate. So in Iowa, you know, where I was born and raised, you know, we grow a lot of corn. Probably a lot of people know. Most mm-hmm. of that corn goes to ethanol. A lot of that corn goes to animal feed. And mm-hmm. then it goes towards things like high fructose corn syrup. What I was referring to before, though, however, that there is a genetically engineered sweet corn that's on the market.
Mm-hmm.
That was released on the market, this is 2015, I think that was in 2012, that mm-hmm. was released on the market. And it has largely gone to the fresh market. So it's not probably in a lot of processed things.
Mm-hmm.
So this is exactly why we need labeling, because there really isn't anymore any way, you know, to tell. People say, well, I go for non-GMO, project labeled, verified, which is fine. I go for organic, which is, you know, fantastic and even better. But, mm-hmm. you know, for example, where I lived in Iowa, it wasn't, you know, organic is really not readily available.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for 20 years, I worked to feed my four children. I was very concerned about genetically engineered ingredients. I think I'm like a lot of moms out there
mm-hmm.
who are concerned about this, just because, you know, the science that's been done on animals, for example, is very concerning. And I don't really want to subject, you know, my children to that huge question mark, right? If it's safe or not. Mm-hmm. My kids are not really, I don't really want them to be that science experiment. And I think a lot of parents are like me. So, you know, I want to know. I want to know if I don't have an organic product available to me, if it has been made with genetically engineered ingredients, because I've chosen to avoid that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so I don't know if I answered your question about the corn, you know, but it's ubiquitous, I guess.
So then from there, what people tend to think is, oh, it's everywhere. I've already eaten it. I'm not aware that I am experiencing any health problem from it, or if I have a health problem. You know, I don't really understand that could be connected, or if it is connected or not. So if I'm already eating it and it's everywhere, then A, does it matter? And, you know, what would lead us to think that it does matter?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And again, I get that question a lot. I think you're reflecting, you know, it's probably on the minds of a lot of Americans, because this is mm-hmm. new for Americans. This isn't new for Europeans, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Europeans had this public debate, and mm-hmm. in America, we really did not have this public debate.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you look at the statistics, you know, of where, you know, the rise of a lot of, you know, food allergies, for example, when
mm-hmm.
you look at, like, digestive issues,
mm-hmm.
You know, it goes right along the same track as the approval of a lot of these genetically engineered foods, which, of course, most of them now have been engineered to withstand pesticides. So, for example, when you were talking about the corn earlier, you know, Roundup Ready has been the most common type, you know, of a genetically engineered crop out there. When you're mm-hmm. whether you're talking about corn, soybeans, canola, cotton, you know, alfalfa, and sugar beets, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's sugar in a lot of things, there's corn in a lot of things, and these are all genetically engineered to withstand. And there's, of course, which is the main component of Roundup, is glyphosate. And there's also been a lot of studies that have been done to show health issues, of course, you know, with glyphosate and the digestive system and so forth. So, you know, I mean, I think that's a really common problem that a lot of people have, especially here in America, you know, is digestive issues. And, you know, the connections, like I know that you and I have talked about a number of times
mm-hmm.
about the gut, and when we talk about the children, and, you know, whether it be, you know, ADD or, you know, sometimes autism has been linked to this in the gut. Because we know that when we heal the gut, you know, children can, you know, those symptoms of those things can subside. So, you know, just really the question is, is food going to be our medicine or is food going to be our poison? And food is here to be, you know, our medicine. Food's here to be our sustenance. And as a mother, I have seen it as such a great betrayal, if you will, you know, of what we have done to our food system and what we are giving our children. And I think that all children, you know, deserve to have, you know, the best food, organic food, food that does not have herbicides and toxins and questionable ingredients. And I think, you know, that that's really what's at the heart of what we're talking about. And it gets back to what you were talking about with policy, you know, because as much as we want to have these things, we feel like we deserve this for us and our families. The fact is that policy determines, right, what's in our grocery store. So, you know, that, and that's of course in the crux of our organization, you know, in trying to influence that and change that for the better for the future.
So, yeah, I think that's a really terrific kind of overview and introduction to the topic for people that may be kind of considering this at this time. You know, when you say there's a choice between, you know, are we going to have healthy food or are we going to, you know, have unhealthy food as our only option? For a long time, there's been a whole large group in the health conscious community. You know, many of the people who listen to Gary Noel, listen to Progressive Radio, et cetera, have come to, you know, they may now be hearing shows that kind of, you know, go further on from health and how we attain it as individuals. But, you know, they come to that from health seeking, from listening to doctors who are telling and empowering people by saying, you know, what we can do to improve our health. But it's kind of, you know, and so, you know, I think the people that would be listening to this network are pretty much in the camp of, you know, I feel health is important and I want to do something about it. There's also a sense that there are many other people who, you know, don't have the economic options, don't have the knowledge, don't have the interest, don't have the willpower or the wherewithal for various reasons, some of which, you know, may just be a lack of information. Some of it may be a lack of, you know, kind of a sense that they can do something. Some of it may just be they don't, you know, they just put a real low priority to health because they, you know, they maybe they don't have the wherewithal or they don't, you know, they don't have role models for doing it, or, you know, they're just really in dire straits where they just don't have the time to pursue that. So, you know, there are a lot of reasons why many, many, many Americans are kind of neglectful of their health and are eating what, you know, we're calling unhealthy foods. And then, you know, the people listening to this network are more in the camp of those who are eating the healthy foods and you know, wanting to protect them. So I guess what I see is that the people who are already oriented toward health really should be the first ones to look beyond just the plate, the farmer's market, or the supermarket to what's coming down the line to affect our food supply. Because the people who are already overweight, who are having chronic health issues, who are, you know, going toward fast food because that is like their best economic option, you know, those people are not really going to maybe always understand what we're talking about. But if we, the kinds of people that listen to Progressive Radio, my audience, if, you know, we are not engaged, if we're not thinking a step ahead, if we're not really taking a stand with organizations like Food Democracy Now and Organic Consumers to protect a healthy food supply, we, you know, it's going to become a little counterproductive to keep telling people to eat this if it's, you know, we're not making sure it's going to be available, and we have to be the ones to do that. You know, the people out there who are stuck in, you know, most people who are stuck in a unhealthy food silo, which you describe where you live, you know, may not have your energy, fortitude, knowledge, you know, or wherewithal to go and put it together for their families. It's just simply too hard. And so, you know, what happens also that I see in the media is that therefore there becomes a media debate, devaluing healthy food, devaluing organic food. It's like, oh, we don't have to bother to fight for it because it's elitist, or, you know, and truly we don't have if we had food economic justice, then it would be available to everyone. Since we don't have that, the people who don't have it or in silos or can't afford it don't understand its value as well, and are more likely to kind of dismiss it because they kind of think it's something, you know, for self-involved rich people, you know, to be honest. And so even though health is really for everyone, unless we take a stand, as you're doing with your organization, and make sure it's for everyone, then we really leave ourselves open to, you know, being in a bubble and indulging in a certain kind of elitism. And that's one of the reasons that I personally, who, you know, basically came along in that bubble, opened the door in that bubble and said, you know, what can we do for everyone? Because the point is, this, you know, there are people who understand why the health impacts and why they want to know what's in their food. And then there are many other people who don't know, who don't care, and, you know, who need further education. And this is also a way to educate people both to this issue and to all the issues related to maintaining a healthy food supply. So there I am on my little podium. But let me ask you, you know, how have we done in the last year? We had two referendums to label in two different states. I, you know, without your kind of going into anything confidential or anything else, you know, did the people who care about healthy food, who show up in the numbers, did they show up? Did they vote? Are they, you know, really engaged and seeing, you know, why they need to be engaged?
Yeah, well, I mean, that brings us to, you know, another, you know, very good point, you know, and what I was thinking about, you know, and what you were saying just now as well, is that, you know, what the food system that we have and the policies that we have are really, you know, they're not accidents, you know, they're no mistake. And, you know, of course, it's the result of some very powerful, you know, food companies like Coca-Cola and Pepsi, and of course, the Grocery Manufacturers Association. Seed and chemical companies like Monsanto, Dow, DuPont, these companies have given a great amount of money. So when you ask if people have shown up, if you, you know, to vote for this, when we first start these ballot initiatives consistently in each of these states, first in California, where we had a ballot initiative in 2012, and then Washington, and then, of course, in 2014, there was a ballot initiative, and the people of California and Oregon voted on this. When we start out these ballot initiatives and we just put the, you know, question to the people in a poll and say, you know, do you want to know if you're eating genetically engineered foods? You know, it's consistent around 70%, and sometimes more than 70%, because it's very common sense, right? People say, well, yeah, I want to know. I want to know. By the time, you know, these companies get done with their spending campaigns, you know, those numbers drop significantly, right? And, of course, in Oregon, we lost by a mere 837 votes. And that was after a recount, and that was in 1.5 million votes cast in that state. So, you know, the big question is, and the thing, here's where it involves really all of us. And where this issue really gets me is that it just really means that our democracy is up for sale. That, you know, these companies, they go on the air, the commercials are, you know, they are misleading, they're deceptive, and they're bold lies, you know, in what they say. And they scare people. So, you know, this issue really is much about this issue anymore, you know. It's really more about who can buy the voters. And, yeah, so, you know, when people have shown up, people show up and we always lose. by a very, 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 very small margin, you know, mm-hmm. 1.5% or less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the good news is that in other states like Connecticut and mm-hmm. Maine, they have passed bills to label genetically engineered foods. Of course, those bills are dependent upon other states also passing bills.
Mm-hmm.
In Vermont, for example, they have passed a standalone labeling bill. I don't know if your listeners are aware, but this morning, for example, there is a hearing right now as we speak, or is just about to take place, because they did pass that bill, and the Grocery Manufacturers Association sued the state to stop that bill from being implemented.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah.
So, golly.
The deep pocket rules is what you're saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying, you know, that the people have overwhelmingly said that they want this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very common sense bills and initiatives that we put forward. We work together with other groups like Center for Food Safety, Organic Consumers Association, and, you know, we make sure that these bills are very consistent and these ballot initiatives,
mm-hmm.
you know, that it's not they like to put forward. You know, this is very common sense. It's very simple. It just says on the package, this product is made with genetically engineered ingredients. And that's it. You know, that's it. But what we're up against is money. It's always the money.
So, you know, what they're concerned about is that if people know that this is in the food, that they will be concerned and they won't buy it. And so they are just,
right.
you know, they're basically spending to preserve their market, you know. I mean, that's what's going on here, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the reason that these products are cheap. And it's a bit complex as far as the legislation goes, or the regulations, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but these products are subsidized by the taxpayer, right? So
mm-hmm.
this is why it's cheap for the companies to get genetically engineered corn products, for example, or genetically engineered cottonseed oil.
Can you explain how they're subsidized so that people, you know, really understand that? Because I think, you know, a lot of people are just kind of, they make the leap and they go, well, people are, you know, buying this because it's cheaper and that's what they can afford.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if only more people would, you know, buy healthy foods, why don't they do what I do? And that's if you have mm-hmm. the wherewithal to do it and if you can get it in your neighborhood. They don't understand that other people can't get it, that other people can't afford it,
mm-hmm.
and that there's a reason that other people mm-hmm. can't get it and afford it. So can you kind of lay that
yeah.
out a little bit for people?
Yeah, of course. Thank you. And, you know, the first thing I'll say is that, you know, farmers grow food in a very important, you know, part of our society as we've developed, you know, so that we can all eat, right? You know, so
mm-hmm.
the idea of subsidizing farmers, or what farmers grow, I should say, giving them subsidy payments, you know, mm-hmm. started out as a good one, you know, because farmers are dependent upon, you know, weather patterns, right? They're dependent upon things that are out of their control. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, if a farmer is in good faith planting, you know, a crop and they have a drought or they have a flood or, you know, some kind of natural disaster, crop is destroyed, we don't want that farmer to go out of business, right? We want them to stay on the land. So, you know, it's good that as a society we make sure that our farmers stay there to grow food. You know, what has happened, you know, over the years as it has developed, is that they've said, well, you know, we are going to subsidize farmers if they grow these certain crops, you know. So, for example, if a farmer grows genetically, or corn, I should say, if they grow corn or soybeans or any kind of commodity crop, they will get subsidies. And, of course, like I said, the crops, those crops that are grown are like 80, 90, and upwards percent are genetically engineered. So, but if a farmer says, you know what, I want to take some of that land and I want to grow vegetables, you know, they are going to lose a significant portion, if not all, of their subsidy payments. They are only encouraged to grow those commodity crops. know, a lot of people might think, well, that just doesn't even make sense. And I would be right there with you, you know, but this is the encouragement, and this is where the collusion of corporations like the chemical companies, like Monsanto, whose seed was actually a solution looking for a problem, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they patented the Roundup. So, of course, it stands to reason that if they're going to sell more Roundup, they have to have a seed, you know, to withstand, you know, they're killing the crop. So, you know, I tell my kids, I said if they could patent air, they would do that. You know, this everybody eats, right? So it's a brilliant business model. Unfortunately, it's a very harmful business model, and all of the promises that they have made of higher yield, of less pesticides, for example, have mm-hmm. not come to fruition. You know, mm-hmm. we do not see that when you look at, you know, statistical data. When you look at the USDA's own data, you know, that's what it shows, that we've had an increase in pesticides and that we've had a decrease in yield. So
the whole claim is that we're feeding yeah. the world and, you know, we can't do without this because we're going to be starving, hungry people, you know, abroad. And you're saying that they don't increase yield over traditional agricultural growing techniques.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, and there, you know, there was a UN report that was done. I think it was maybe 2008. And it showed that, you know, when we talk about feeding the world, that it is, you know, because we have this growing population, right? And they say that, well, by, you know, 2050, we're going to be looking at 9 billion people on the planet. Mm-hmm. Well, the ways that we produce more crops and more abundant food is through sustainable agriculture. That is what this UN report found. And, of course, as you and I both know, we are shipping our food all over the world. We're not really growing it where we live anymore. And there was a Swedish study that was done that shows that we have more than enough, you know, to feed this planet, more than enough. And it's just really an issue of distribution, you know. But the of course, what we have to deal with as people in this modern society, as we're looking towards what we want to create for our children and where we are vulnerable, is that we need to move away from saying we are only going to do this, whatever it is, because it makes money. Sustainable agriculture, growing food where we live, is not about, it's not about making money, right? It's not about making people billionaires. It's just about feeding people. And, of course, these companies like Monsanto and General Mills and Coke and Pepsi, you know, they want to be billionaires, right? They want to make money. So they have found a way to do that. And now, of course, we as people are charged, you know, with walking that back just so we can feed ourselves, you know, healthy, nutritious food, you know, for everybody, not just for, you know, that 1% or whatever, like you talked about. You know, food is, it's not a political issue. It really isn't. It's not a partisan issue. It's not a, you know, it's not an elitist issue. You know, we all eat, and we all deserve to be healthy and nourished. That's how I look at it.
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah, very, very, very well said. Let's take a break for our station identification here on Connect the Dots, and we'll come back and talk and unpack this a little bit more because, you know, we're not talking about, obviously, you know, the people who grow, you know, need to make some money or they can't continue to do it. That's what sustainable agriculture means. But there's a difference between, you know, making some money and having, you know, so that it permits you to live, you know, with your family and, you know, to provide what you do, the food for others. It's another thing to make levels of money that build these enormous infrastructures and make some people very, very rich. So there's a big difference there. And so, you know, here again, we started talking about health problems and how food system contributes to health. And I have more about that I think we should discuss too. But here we're talking about, you know, how really overarching factors in our society are interfering in a major way. So stay with us, listeners. We'll be back talking with Lisa Stokey of Food Democracy Now about a healthy food supply and what that means and how to get it after station identification here on the Progressive Radio Network.
Mm-hmm. This is PRN, the comprehensive news source for the world's progressive community. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
My name is David Crow, and I want you to listen to my new show on PRN.fm called The Infectious Myth. Really, the only thing infectious about the show will be the questions that start cascading when the myths about infectious disease come tumbling down. There is no infectious paradigm that, when examined closely with scientific evidence, does not have serious holes. SARS, AIDS, polio, mad cow. We will cover all of these and even stray into other areas of questionable science on occasion. I hope you will listen and even call in. Challenge me if you like. Interesting discussions will result. If you don't catch my show live every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, listen to the podcast. And if you use iTunes, do me a favor and rate the show there. That's The Infectious Myth, Tuesday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, every week.
This is journalist Dave Lindorf. I'll be hosting the show This Can't Be Happening each Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on PRN.fm. Because we know it is happening, each week's program will feature some issue that's been getting ignored or misreported, like Social Security, climate change, military spending, or the government's destruction of the Internet. Please join me at This Can't Be Happening on Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern.
Gary Null's incisive documentary and informational films on today's most crucial issues have won dozens of international awards. As a free service to listeners, acclaimed films such as War on Health and Seeds of Death are available to watch in their entirety online. Just go to YouTube and search for Gary Null. Thank you for your continued support. This is PRN.fm, the number one station for progressive minds.
Welcome back, listeners, to the second half of Connect the Dots. We're talking today with Lisa Stokey of Food Democracy Now about what's happening to our food supply and what we can do about it, what's happening to our healthy food supply and what's happening to our unhealthy food supply. If you are just tuning in and listening to the second half of our show, you'll be able to find it in the archives and listen to the full show later this afternoon. If you've enjoyed the show and you've been listening and you've stayed with us and you think others might enjoy this program, please do like us on iTunes and pass us along to friends. We have a wonderful bank of prior broadcasts on this, on the Connect the Dots archives, and I think you'll find many, many, many thought leaders there, letting their hair down, talking in depth, having more than a soundbite analysis of the range of issues that are of concern for all of us today. So please do check out the archives as well. And I also want to ask those who have been listening, if you're concerned about these issues, it's important for all of us that can do so to do a little bit more than just, going and getting the healthy food that we choose to eat ourselves. If you're able to do a little bit more, spend some of your hard-earned dollars and your social capital to help more people get involved. You can do this by going to fooddemocracynow.org and supporting that organization and their terrific work nationwide as well as at the Centers of Power in Washington, D.C. on all of our behalves. You can support the Progressive Radio Network. We've had shows in the past that reveal why it's extremely important to support independent media in a time of contradiction and controversy. So I hope you will do that. And you can also use social media. This doesn't cost anything. Let other people know. Join Food Democracy Now. Post about their actions. Let your friends know. Have conversations. Inform yourself.
It's up to us to engage others and ourselves. We may not like it, but that's the reality. And when you kind of get involved in the flow of it, even though you kind of have to face some hard facts about what's going on in our world, as we've discussed today and we'll continue with on the second half of the show, it's also incredible to be in the company of the people who care. And in my experience, activists deeply, deeply care. We've recently had this wonderful win in New York. We need more wins. We need you to get involved to have that. So let's go back to our conversation, with Lisa. And it's just so much fun to have you again on the show today. Lisa, it's great that you're with us. And I thank you
thank
for
you,
the
Allison.
Amazing work that you're doing. It's really, some of the same hard lessons that you're articulating that I've heard in the fracking community. It's not something any of us wants, but we're dealing with it. And, the fact that 1,000 more people voting and you would have passed the referendum. And the other thing we need is more people who are more media literate and kind of picking their head up and not just using the same talking points that persuaded them, but really, kind of figuring out how to have these conversations and also how to see through what you're being told by your favorite providers. They may be kind of pulling the wool over your eyes a little bit. Not on this station. I think everyone here is pretty much straight speaking. But, when you're out there, there's just a lot of misinformation. And just the kind of thing that you were describing happened in the states where they were labeling referendums, and people who 70%, as you said, supported labeling, became confused by ads. And so I think this really shows that more and more of us need to become more media literate. We can't just swallow the first soundbite that trips across our path because of the fact that these companies that you're talking about have the big bucks, have got their products subsidized. They also, have the money to spend on ads, commercials, PR, press releases, lunches with reporters, advertising and publications, and all the rest of it to, put their spin on things out there and to get you listeners to believe their story. So this means that you really kind of have to step up in terms of your own health literacy and bring other people along with you in those conversations, because otherwise we're going to be bought, sold, and bamboozled, so we don't want to see that happening. Basically what you presented, Lisa, and at the end of the last half hour is rather shocking, which is that, it's really sustainable agriculture that feeds the world. And, the other thing that I wanted to interject there, you were saying that, these commodity crops are subsidized. They don't need the subsidies. Not only are many of these, as you stated, GMO crops, but also many of these are unhealthy foods. Why do we invest in propagating the very foods that make people fat? Corn, potatoes, all the rest of it. These are foods that we should not be subsidizing, because this is not what people should be eating if they want to stay healthy. Now, I think a lot of people are aware of that, but there's also an idea that somehow if you try to tell somebody not to eat a French fry, you're becoming the food police. But on the other hand, we're already pushing them to eat the French fry, the popcorn, the corn oil, and all the rest of it by virtue of the fact that our taxpayer dollars are paying to lower those costs to assure that they will eat it. I mean, are we crazy?
Well, I don't know if I'll comment on that. But, they're very, very well, size influence, right? And money, can clearly, change minds. And, we've seen this, throughout history, with other examples of propaganda. And convincing people of things that are not good for them, You know, we saw very extreme examples, of course, you know, in Nazi Germany, right? You know, where people were convinced of things that they, you know, kind of go, that really go against, you know, the human spirit. So, you know, when we're talking about just convincing people that certain things are good for them, like smoking, for example, right? You know, how many people were convinced, you know, here in America that smoking was actually a good thing for them, you know, for a period of time? You know, we now know that to be very, very different. And a lot of there's a lot of similarities there between, you know, the tobacco industry and the propaganda that was put forth there and what's happening now. And the thing that has been the most frustrating for me, you know, as an activist and the founder of this organization and the work that we have done, you know, in really seeing the evolution or maybe de-evolution, if you want to look at it that way, of these ballot initiatives, is to see how, like you said, people are confused, people that are natural, you know, voters, people that are really on the right side of this, meaning they are, you know, about organics, whatever, become confused. Fusion. They spent, you know, over $18 million in Oregon, for example, and that buys a lot of confusion. You know, when I was in Oregon and talking with people who are, you know, people who believe in, you know, good environmental stewardship and farm to table and all of that, they said, well, I'm really confused. And here's where that confusion comes from. I'll just give you
I'd like
a
to hear this. This is
example.
Important to understand an example.
Yes.
Yep.
Hello.
Because it could happen to any of us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, here in Colorado, where I live now, too, it's the same kind of tactics that they used in Oregon. Commercials would be up. I saw commercials here. We couldn't afford to get on the air here in Colorado. It was a very, you know, it was a hotbed of, you know, political races here. So to get on the air, it was like $1 to $2 million. You know, we didn't have that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
So they were on the air, and what they would say is they would say, well, this will harm existing food regulations. So they said that if we go ahead and label, it's going to harm existing food regulations. And then on the screen, they would show the organic label, the USDA organic label, and they would show the non-GMO project label. So a person like me, for example, is going to look at that and say, well, if I vote for this, this ballot initiative to label genetically engineered foods, I'm going to be hurting those food regulations that I care about the most.
You're kidding.
Organic and non-GMO. No, I'm not kidding. And, of course, you and I both know that, you know, GMO labeling doesn't harm those things, right? I mean, it's in those are the values of non-GMO project. You know, those are the values of organic, right? But so they bought a lot of confusion. And, you know,
so
of course, the other
lie.
Side notes.
They're putting
an outright lie
out there.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. They were telling, I was in debates here, listening to debates. My partner participated in these debates, you know, with the no side. And they were telling people that farmers would have to buy $400,000 combines if this was passed. You know, and we kind of scratch our heads and say, how on earth? You know, do they get to that? Well, they were telling people they had to separate their crops. Well, you know, that kind of thing is already going on because farmers know that if they're growing non-GMO and if they're growing organic, those have, you know, a higher value in the marketplace, right? They're going to get more money for that. So that's already happening, you know. But they were telling people that this was going to harm farmers. So, you know, no one wants to harm a farmer, right? You know, so that argument works very well. And that's really what happened. That is the crux of what happened. They bought a lot of confusion. They lied to people, and people wanted to do the right thing. So they thought, well, I'm probably doing the right thing by voting no.
Hmm.
That's how that happened. Yeah.
So these weren't just indifferent people. These were people who were actually aligned with your issue, who were became confused and frightened because they were lied to.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly right.
Wow.
The other argument they put forward was about animals because animal products were not labeled. And of course, under, you know, the existing, you know, initiatives as they were written and the bills as they're written, that if an genetically engineered animal were to come on the market, like the salmon, which Aqua Bounty has been trying to get deregulated for a number of years now, that would be labeled. But as of right now, you know, cows, for example, are not genetically engineered because they eat genetically engineered feed. You know, I have concerns about animals eating genetically engineered feed, right? But that would not be covered by this legislation because you can only address, you know, one thing at a time, right? That would be another piece of legislation.
So the concern there, Lisa, is that the animals would be labeled? In other words, the meat products from these livestock would have to be labeled. And why is that something that would bother other people?
Well, because it was an argument that worked with people who, again, who would be initial voters, you know, that they said this is not strong enough legislation. The no side said this is not strong enough legislation.
I see. They rejected it on that basis. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, and this just gets back to your point of being a more informed electorate, right? Of if you were a person and you just took a look at that legislation and if it only took a few minutes, you'd be like, well, okay, that makes sense to me that this piece of legislation would not apply to an animal eating genetically engineered ingredients because I'm a human. I eat genetically engineered food all the time, unfortunately, but I'm not genetically engineered, right? So it doesn't make the animal genetically engineered. It's just, it's, you know, it's a legal difference. But this is something, you know, that the no side was very deceptive in putting forward because people do want strong legislation, but they have to be willing to take a look at it just a little bit, you know. And unfortunately, we are in these times, you know, where we, you know, in the days of, you know, we're in the time of ALEC, right, you know, where corporations are putting forward legislation that benefit them. And,
can you,
you know,
explain to our listeners what ALEC is?
Well, you could maybe explain a little better than me exactly what ALEC is. I mean, obviously I'm aware of ALEC. I can't think of what the entire acronym is right now.
No, I can't
but
either.
Basically, okay. Well, it's a think tank, you know, that, you know, of, you know, attorneys and people who are very skilled at knowing policy and regulation, at putting forward policy that benefits corporations directly. And then, of course, within their organization, they have representatives that are willing, you know, to put this legislation forward. Mm-hmm. And lots of times, of course, that legislation is it's not good for the future. It's not good for people. It's not good for the environment, all these things that we talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a pretty good. I mean, I would further say that the thing that's really kind of unique about ALEC, which you mentioned and which, you know, I'll just highlight a little bit, is the fact that legislators and industry PR people and sort of white paper conceptualizers are coming together in ALEC to meet, to write legislation that changes public policy that then the legislators will then introduce. They didn't think it through. They didn't write it. They were kind of helped, they were given it by industry and told to introduce it. So on the one hand, we do have, you know, campaign contributions that we can't track that are influencing and shifting the loyalty of our elected officials away from the public toward the you know, people with the deep pockets whose identities are unknown. On the second stroke, we have these same legislators, once in office, who are kind of being handed a cookbook with different recipes for different legislation and regulatory policies that will benefit these same corporations. So basically, with this, I mean, you've got someone who's influenced, and you have someone who is doing the bidding, and you have somebody who doesn't even have to figure it out for themselves because they already wrote these bills for them. And these bills can cover food. They can cover a wide range of different areas. And then, you know, people are out there, the public is out there kind of in whatever that area is, you know, trying to raise awareness about it and turn the tide in a different direction. And this happens on many, many different fronts. And that's also, so are there any, we only have a couple more minutes left to the show, but let me ask you, what's coming down the pike in the near future in terms of policy and regulation in your world?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. Well, as I pointed out, you know, probably one of the most significant things happening right now is happening today, and it's the hearing, you know, in Vermont, which will be the start of the process in determining, you know, whether or not this law in Vermont, you know, will be upheld. And, you know, that's something that we should all keep an eye on. I mean, that's very pivotal because that will, you know, set, you know, precedents for these other states.
Mm-hmm.
As we go forward, you know, the thing is people, you know, sometimes people are tempted to say, and I've heard in the media, you know, in some circles that, you know, this is just going to fail and we're not going to make it. Well, you know, again, if we know a little bit of our history, we can see that there's, you know, a lot of legislation, that has been put forward that, you know, that doesn't necessarily pass the first time. It doesn't mean that it never passes. You know, I guess marijuana is actually a very recent and good example of that. You know, that's been put to a vote by the people, you know, on a number of things in several states. And, you know, now it's starting to pass and those initiatives are starting to pass. So it, you know, we're not walking away from that. We do think that this is an important right that we have. We are going to have to be, you know, more diligent than ever. I just was reading last night in Idaho, for example, that legislature there is considering putting forward a bill. There's a Republican there that's considering putting forward a bill to preempt state labeling. So
they
of course that's what's happening in Congress right now with the DARK Act. That's another thing that our, you know, that a lot of the organizations that we work with are focused on right now is, you know, making sure that our members are heard in Congress. So that this legislation to preempt states' rights is not passed. And, you know, as I've said, this is not really a partisan issue, but, you know, unfortunately, you know, we've had a tendency to see Republicans, right, have it, you know, to gravitate more towards something like this, you know, to preempt state rights, unfortunately, to label genetically engineered foods, to take that right away from them. So that's something, you know, that we do need to be diligent on. You know, but the positive side, you know, is that more people than ever are aware and involved, and they do see that this is really kind of a mandate, I think, you know, for our generation, you know, for right now, that we do take action on this, that we do say, you know, our food is not going to be dictated, you know, by corporations, you know, again, as I said earlier, looking to make, you know, billions of dollars. We want to see, you know, organic farmers, right, thrive here in America and around the world, not these companies, because as you stated before, these tend to be the foods that are not healthy for us, right? You know, companies can produce food that's healthy for us if they want to. And, you know, we are always going to be engaged in that process of creating that market for them and saying that market is there and we want you to do this. We want you to have non-GMO. We want you to have organic. We want you to have more regional food systems. You know, that's something that we need to talk about, too, you know, as we're moving into this very serious time of climate change that does make it more difficult for us to have our food shipped 1,500 miles. We can't do that anymore. So, you know, in this time period that we have, you know, years ago I heard Fred Kirshenman, who's, you know, who's really a hero of mine, speak. You know, we put together an event a number of years ago in Iowa and had him speak. He's an organic farmer in North Dakota, and he's a policy expert, and he's the president of, you know, Stone Barns in New York there. And he said, you know, we really need to be taking our existing energy resources and putting them into these infrastructures, right, so that we can sustain ourselves. things like windmills, like more regional food systems. You know, you can even look at like, you know, public transportation, right? We have the opportunity to do all these things now to help us into the future and for the next generation. And if we don't take those opportunities now, that is really how we set ourselves up for, you know, deep challenges as far as how we sustain ourselves and live a life of health and prosperity, right?
Thank you.
If we don't take those advantages now, we
have to
do that.
Thank you. We're going to have to close the program because I'm hearing the music hinting there.
Okay.
I think that's a brilliant way to close, Lisa, and, you know, really important. We have this opportunity. This is the time. Listeners, go to fooddemocracynow.org and stay informed, donate. Thank you for being with us, Lisa, again, and we'll have you back again, and thank you for the work you do.
Thank you, Allison. Have a wonderful day.
You too. And same to you, listeners. Have a great week. Thank you for tuning in to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and come back and join us again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.